Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Once again, here on the program, we want to take the opportunity to talk about the care of companion animals, and something that we try to do from time to time on the show because we figure that people will always have those sorts of questions. And we have happen to have a vet school here at the University of Illinois and a lot of really fine and dedicated folks who spend their time taking care of animals and have been generous enough with their time to come over and spend some time with us. So we're going to try to do a couple of things this morning on the program. First of all, to do a kind of a talk to the vet show. So if people do indeed have questions about the animals in their lives, they should feel welcome to call in. We also thought it would be a good thing to talk a little bit about animal welfare, animal cruelty kinds of issues. And so we have two guests with us, and I think we can cover this territory quite well. Maureen McMichael is Associate Professor of Veterinary Clinical Medicine at the U of I College of Mad Medicine. And there we can do the talk to the doctor kinds of things. But also joining us in the studio is Chelsea Angelo. She is the Animal Control Officer for the city of Urbana. She's a civilian police employee. She's responsible for the enforcement of all the city ordinances that pertain to animals. She also is the person who responds to reports of animals that are being neglected or cruelly treated. She's a veteran licensed humane investigator. So whatever questions you might have, I think one or both of the guests will do their best to give you an answer. And all you have to do is pick up the telephone and give us a call. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We also have a toll-free line. That one is good anywhere that you can hear us, so if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point here, you got a question, you can give us a call. Well, thanks very much, both of you, to be here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Just one thing I think maybe we could start out talking a little bit about here, and that is sooner or later it is going to get warm. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced of it, and that perhaps it would be a good idea to talk a little bit about sort of routine things that apply to animals, and I guess particularly we're probably talking about dogs here, but any animal that has to spend time outside when it gets hot. What should you be thinking about?
Well, the first thing you should be thinking about is never, ever leave your dog in the car. Certainly not a cat either. No, never leave a pet in the car in the heat at all. People think that you can, in the dead of the summer, you can leave your dog in the car with the windows cracked open. Even with the windows cracked open, that the heat just generates rapidly in that car. And heat stroke with a dog being left in a car is not uncommon at all. And it's a devastating disease to treat. And it's got a fairly high mortality rate. So it's really important to pay attention to that. The other thing is never force them to do anything. We have people that want to take their dog out for a 5-mile run. You know, they haven't been out all winter. And now we have a beautiful day and they want to go for a nice 5-mile run. And about a mile into it, the dog sort of seeks water, potentially runs to a stream and rolls around, giving you a real clear clue that they're hot. Don't force them. Do not force them. Let them go at their own pace. Stop frequently for water. Cool them down. If you think at any time your dog has heat stroke or has gotten overheated, cool them down rapidly.
What are there some particular signs that the dog would be suffering heat stroke? What would you be looking for?
Well, they release heat through panting. So the first thing they're going to do is pant, and you'll see them panting. And then they'll get a little bit slow and lethargic. And at that point, you need to cool them down. And the one thing that people need to be careful of is we did have a dog with heat stroke who came in with third-degree burns on his back because they didn't clear the hose. So it was a hot summer day. The hose had been sitting out in the heat. The owner picked up that hose and sprayed the dog, and the water in the hose was almost boiling. And so you really got to be careful that you're spraying cool water on the dog, not warm or hot water. Mm-hmm. You can throw them in a bathtub with cool water, not ice. Ice is not helpful, but cool water. That's the best way to cool them down. And then call your vet or call the emergency service immediately.
Yeah. And I'm sure that you would say that then for animals, for dogs that are going to be spending a lot of time outside during the day, you need to make sure that they got someplace they can get out of the sun. And you need to make sure they got plenty of water.
That's right. And if there's any way you could put ice in their bowl to keep the water a little bit cool on the day, that's great. If there's any way you could take a break and hose them down at some point in midday, that would be great. But as long as they're quiet, laying down, not moving a lot, in the shade, and they have access to water, generally dogs do fine.
Yeah. You know, very clearly there are dogs that seem to have developed, breeds that seem to have developed in northerly climes, places where it doesn't get to be 80 or 90 degrees in the summertime. And we know those kinds of breeds, things like huskies and malamutes and things like that, that are really built for the cold. And you can tell they love it because when it snows, they go nuts. They want to go out and run around and play in the snow because that's somehow what they were made for. So I'm sure that people have those dogs understand that when it gets really hot, you have to make allowances because they're just not into that kind of weather. But I guess that people also shouldn't have the idea that somehow maybe there are breeds that actually like it when it's really hot. And I would guess that probably any dog is not going to do well in extreme heat.
That's right. That's right. Because they have a fur coat, with the exception of the Mexican hairless. Almost all dogs have a full coat of hair. And it would be equivalent to a human wearing a full winter gear with gloves, a hat, you know, scarf in 90 degree heat. It's just unimaginable how that heat stays in you, and it's impossible to get rid of it.
For those dogs, particularly that do have heavy coats, are there some kind of recommendations for particular kinds of grooming or cutting or things that you want to do with the hair coat so that maybe they can be a little bit more comfortable when it's warmer?
Some people recommend that. The other problem you have is that once you expose their skin to the ground, if they're outdoor dogs and you expose their skin to the ground by shaving them, then you have a higher incidence of fleas or issues. Ticks can get in easier. So the hair coat is protective, and so there's a sort of a 50-50. You're not getting all benefits just by shaving. The best thing to do is keep them as comfortable as possible. They probably should be kept indoors in the hottest days. And maybe just let them outside in the evening when it's cooled down.
Yeah. We have two guests here with us on the program. Maureen McMichaels, Associate Professor of Veterinary Clinical Medicine in the U of I College of Vet Medicine. And also here in studio with us is Chelsea Angelo. She's the Animal Control Officer for the City of Urbana. And if you have questions either way about animal welfare issues or about animal health issues, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Maybe here I'll turn over and talk with a little bit with Chelsea a little bit. Is it really clear what I think probably abuse is and cruel treatment of an animal? I think probably a lot of people will be really clear on what that means. But as far as neglect is concerned, people, I'm sure, have different ideas about raising animals and what constitutes proper treatment. Is there some kind of really clear, uniform standard that you go by to decide whether an animal is being adequately taken care of?
Yes, there is a standard as far as the state statutes go as what an owner must provide to an animal. Mm. It's limited in its scope. There is some gray area and some area for movement. One thing that we run across is this a person who needs some education or maybe some assistance taking care of their animal, or is this a willful neglect or a cruelty abuse situation? The standards that the state goes by are that the owner must provide an animal with shelter, food, and water. They must provide veterinary care to prevent suffering. That doesn't include a distemper vaccination, unfortunately. They must provide shelter from the elements, so heat would be one of those. And they must humanely care for. That's the one that we use the most, that you will provide humane care. That is open to interpretation. So obviously, if we go somewhere and there's a husky chained out and it's 95 degrees and there's no shelter and no water, that animal would be subject to impoundment. That doesn't necessarily mean that the person is going to be charged right away. It could be something as simple as there was a family emergency, the dog got put outside, they need some education to understand that this is not acceptable. It could be that this dog is being neglected, in which case we would probably keep the animal and seek charges against the owner if it's something that we feel couldn't be corrected. Mm-hmm. Those are the only real standards that we have as far as legally what an owner must provide to their animal. For veterinarians, obviously, if an animal is in need of some type of care and the owner is not providing that by going to the veterinarian, that in and of itself is a violation of the state and local laws.
Yeah. I suppose there could be a variety of reasons why people would not be taking adequate care of their animals. I suppose there are some people who maybe – and it would be a problem I'm sure we see more of. They actually can't afford it.
Yes.
But also I can imagine some – maybe people thinking that they were doing okay.
Correct.
But by your judgment and maybe by other people's judgment, they weren't. And you would say to that person, well, look at the conditions here. Look at what you're doing. And that person – it's not that they're a bad person and it's not that they're wanting to hurt their animals. They would probably just say to you, well, I what's wrong with this?
Absolutely.
What am I – I don't get what it is you're saying to me.
Right.
What's the problem here?
Right. A perfect example of that is I grew up in Kentucky, and my older generation family had a very different idea of what an animal was to the family. They were there for a purpose, to work or to hunt. They were fed table scraps. I don't think they ever saw a vet in their entire life. And they were disposed of in a not-so-humane manner. Obviously, this is many generations ago, but the way that I feel an animal should be cared for and the way the law says an animal should be cared for is not the way that they always cared for their animals. Many people think that in order to get your animal under control when they're hyper puppies, you must use a heavy hand with them. Well, that's abuse, and obviously that is not okay. And when we address it with someone, they just think that we're being ridiculous. What is wrong with them disciplining their animal in this way? What is wrong with them throwing food to their dog outside on the chain where it lives 24 hours a day? There are different sets of standards that people have. And sometimes you cannot always communicate to these people what they need to do. They're just not going to do it. And in that case, I become very official with them and in some cases have mandated that they never own animals again as long as they're living in my city.
Yeah. And you actually can do that. Huh?
Yes. It's a legal process. It's part of the conviction process that we can – the longest that we were able to get through a court was 2 years with no animals on their property or in their possession. But it's a step in the right direction if we can't get them to do what they need to do by their animals and if they're going to continue to get more.
We have a couple of callers here. We certainly welcome others. The number here in Champaign-Urbana where we are, 333-9455, and also toll-free 800-222-9455. And just again to introduce our guests, Chelsea Angelo is here with us. She is the animal control officer for the city of Urbana. And also we have a vet, Dr. Maureen McMichael. She's associate professor of veterinary clinical medicine in the U of I College of Vet Medicine. And questions either way, health questions about animals, fine. Welfare questions about animals, fine. Any and all of that, we'd be happy to take. And I know that the guests will do their best to give you an answer. Starting out with somebody here on a cell phone on our line number one. Hello.
Hi, about the treatment of animals and when it's appropriate to call animal control. I've seen a dog that I don't know if it's tied out all day or maybe just for an hour, but on like a 6-foot leash out in a yard that's kind of rangy or something. I don't even know. It just seems like that's no space at all for an animal to have any outside time, but maybe that's okay. I don't know. It bugs the hell out of me, but maybe that's fine. I just wonder if that's the kind of thing you should call about, and also someone running in 100-degree weather with a dog, running with their dog when it's, 95 degrees out or whatever. Are those instances where one should, go ahead and call?
I think any time that you have a concern about an animal, it's good that you call. It's better that we get there and find that there's nothing wrong than to not have any knowledge of it and perhaps that animal suffer serious injury or perhaps death or, just simply live an existence that is, quote, not fit for a dog. I think that always you should call if you have concern and don't worry about if it's serious enough. We'll determine that when we get there. And I think, yes, you should call.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. What about maybe the we touched on this a little bit when we were talking earlier about heat stroke, but the caller said that, you know, it amazes me when I see people running in the heat when it's really hot and it's really humid. I think, man, I don't know how you can do that. But he apparently has seen people running out with their dogs in that kind of weather. What would you say to somebody like that?
I've actually approached people and explained to them how dangerous it is and how difficult it is to treat and how expensive it is to treat. If a dog gets full-blown heat stroke, you're talking $3,000 to $5,000 to treat.
Wow.
And that's if he makes it, he or she makes it. The chances of making it through that are very – the same thing with people. Full-blown heat stroke in people is also associated with a very high mortality rate. Because it's a devastating, devastating disease, and it's not something that should be taken lightly. So I will approach the people and mention that.
All right. Well, let's talk with someone in Bloomington. This is our toll-free line, line 4.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
I'd like to have one of your guests speak about the legislation pending in the Illinois House and Senate called Chloe's Bill. And what it could accomplish in terms of shutting down puppy mills and also perhaps address the propaganda campaign of the American Kennel Club against such legislation.
I'm not familiar with all of Chloe's bill. What I do understand is that it is an attempt to try and stop some of the animal hoarding and backyard breeding through specific registration. I'm not intimately familiar with this particular one as far as knowing all of the language in it. I think any time that we've ever proposed through state or local ordinances restricting someone's ability to breed, the American Kennel Club is typically the first to voice objection because they do not want restrictions on breeding. In my line of work, I see many overbred animals, and obviously I see many abandoned and homeless animals. So I am not a fan of breeding, but I understand a person's right to do so. I think that there do need to be some restrictions to make sure that it is done in a manner that will not create further over animal population and will not contribute to the backyard breeding that has become such a problem over the years with animal hoarding.
Thank you. And if I might just follow up, have you become aware of an increase in the number of abandoned animals as a result of the economic crisis?
I've not seen a huge increase, but then again, in our particular area, we do have many agencies and groups available to help people find alternatives to simply having to get rid of their animals. We have, through Care Center and the Humane Society and County Animal Control, developed many spay clinics and developed funds to help people pay for the medical needs of their animals. And there are also places where we can assist them with food for a while until they can get back on their feet. And that's in an attempt to keep the animals in their homes. And so far, it's been working pretty well.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. Other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Just to stay with the subject just for a second, I know, first of all, that there are a lot of people who would argue if you're interested in adopting an animal, that they would suggest that you go to your local shelter because – at least that you think about that, because there are a lot of animals that need homes. If for whatever reason, though, somebody say they really would like to have a purebred dog, I'm sure that there are good breeders and there are bad breeders, you know. I guess my question would be, well, if you were thinking about adopting a purebred dog from a breeder and you have the opportunity, and I would hope that people would deal with someone where they can actually go there, meet them, look around, see the animals, see what kind of condition they're in, see the way that they live, so that they can see all that personally before they would think about adopting a dog. But if, hopefully, if you could do that, What would you suggest people look for? You know, how would you, what sort of questions do you think people should ask, or what should they think about if they were talking with a breeder, they were walking around, they were looking at their place, they were looking at the animals? You know, what would you think about?
Well, can I just say one thing? I agree, absolutely, there are people that want purebreds. But one thing people need to know is that there are breed-specific rescue leagues for every single breed. And so I personally have a fondness for German Shepherds. When I'm ready for another dog, I'm going to the German Shepherd Rescue League, and I will get my German Shepherd that way. And that's another way of getting a dog that needs a home, that doesn't have a home, and you can choose your breed. So it's just something to keep in mind when you want a specific breed.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, and I'll let Chelsea jump in a minute, and I would say look for how you would want to be treated. Are these puppies being treated appropriately? Are they being housed well? Are they being cared for? Are they clean? Do they not have little runny noses? Do they not have runny eyes? Are they well fed? Are they active? You don't want to see them sleeping all the time, looking lethargic, having a discharge from their eyes, really, really in dirty surroundings with feces everywhere. So you really want to make sure the place is clean, well cared for. And I would do a lot of research on the breeder.
Hmm.
What I've found over the years is that the less legitimate ones who are not taking very good care of their animals will not let you on the property to see the animals. They'll meet you somewhere to let you have the puppy. That's always going to be your first clue that this is not a reputable breeder. And previously stated, look up their surroundings if they do allow you on the property.
Okay. Next, we'll talk with somebody in Belgium. Line number 4. Hello.
Good morning, all. I'd like to start a discussion here in a little bit of a different sort of direction. And I'm not casting any disparities against anybody. I live just outside of town, okay? I have about 8 acres. This 8 acres I kind of push towards being more of a habitat for birds and small mammals. I have a next-door neighbor who has about 2 to 4 acres. On this 2 to 4 acres, she has, yesterday I counted over 15 dogs. She has innumerable cats. She has 6 horses and 2 goats. All of which are retained with very minimal fencing. And obviously you can see where my problem's going. She lets them run free. She treats them well. I'm not saying she's abusing them in any way. That's not what's being said here at all. She just doesn't control them. So I set out humane, have a heart traps, and I catch a lot of cats. I catch dogs. I take my dogs that I catch and the cats I catch. Oh, by the way, I have to tell you, I have a dog. I take care of her. She's in a pen that she controls. She has a run. I walk her on a leash. I take care of her. She gets to get in the house as much as my wife will allow her. And a situation like that. So I'm not coming from an animal hater point of view. But what I am coming from is that I take these trapped animals to our local animal control over here in Vermilion County. And I give them to them. It's not 2 days later, I'll catch the same cat again. And after a point, I got upset with him. I said, wait a minute, this is not right. You need to say something to her. Well, she donates a lot of money to this organization. So she caused a problem, and I ended up having to go to court because my dog was a vicious dog. The case was so weak, the judge threw it out as soon as he saw it. So that embarrassed animal control. Now, they're not happy with me, but I keep taking the cats and the dogs that I trap on my property because I like birds. I like small mammals. I like snakes. I like the natural things. And this lady does not control her animals. Her horses tromp down and eat my peach trees. Her dogs run free constantly. Her cats are just a menace to every small animal around. So sometimes I'm not very happy with animal control, if you can see what I'm saying.
No. Understandable. I'm not familiar with Vermilion County's animal control ordinances as far as what their restrictions for animals at large are, what their fines are, how they go about impounding and releasing. it sounds like you have a couple of different issues there, and obviously another person's animals on your property, they're not wanted, and there are ordinances in most areas that prohibit animals from being on other people's properties. Have you looked into what the actual ordinances are for Vermilion County?
Well, I talked to people at Animal Control, and, well, things get heated after a few moments, so.
Sure.
And, no, ma'am. The question I would like to ask is, you know, after a while, I'm thinking about maybe taking the cats to Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Or someplace else where they just won't come back again.
Sure. You might face some liabilities in doing that. My recommendation would be to request a copy of what the actual laws are there where you live. And if for some reason you're having difficulty with a particular animal control, perhaps discuss with the supervisor what your situation is. And if that doesn't work, sir, then I would always recommend, as you know, I tell people here in the city of Urbana, if you're not happy, please go to my supervisor. And if that doesn't work, you're a taxpaying citizen. There's probably a mayor and a council that you can go to with your problem to try and seek some resolution.
Well, as I said, ma'am, I'm outside the city limits. I have gone to the county board, and I've talked to their supervisors and stuff, and there seems to be a bit of a problem here. There must be a political thing that I don't understand. But as you mentioned, I'm held responsible if I take this animal to, say, your animal control over in Champaign or Indianapolis, like I said, someplace Timbuktu, so I know that it won't come back.
Yeah, the problem there, if it's a feral wildcat, you know.
Ma'am, every cat that's running free, as far as I'm concerned, is a feral and wild cat because they kill birds and small mammals constantly.
Sure. Again, you would be looking at some liabilities if your neighbor's cat ends up in Indiana. But I kind of leave that to you. I'm sorry I don't really have any better suggestions to you. I would just say look at what your ordinances are there and see if you can compel the county, the township, to enforce what their laws are.
And have you thought about a fence?
Pardon me, ma'am?
Have you thought about a fence?
Yeah, ma'am, my property is in fence completely around. However, the horses pushed the fence down because she, like I said, she has many, many animals on a very small piece of property. The horses are eating the trees because they're bored. They have nothing else to do. My property has lots of nice green grass on it and green trees, and they push their way across, and they wander over. The goats, they'll eat the tires off the car. I mean, they'll do anything. But and then the cats are just a horrible problem, and the dogs run free. She just doesn't control them. She just does not control them at all. And she does not put fences up. She just does what she pleases, as far as I can tell.
Well, I think we may have given you about the best answer that we can.
Oh, thank you very much.
Other questions, welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our guest here this morning in this part of Focus 580, Chelsea Angelo. She is the animal control officer for the city of Urbana. She's a civilian employee of the police department. She's responsible for the enforcement of all city ordinances that apply to animals. She also responds to reports of animals that are being neglected or cruelly treated. And here in studio with us also, Maureen McMichael. She is Associate Professor of Veterinary Clinical Medicine at the U of I College of Vet Medicine. We can do two things this morning. Either you have sort of routine questions about animal companion animal health, or again, questions that have to do with animal welfare, the kind of thing that Chelsea is responsible for. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Is there some sort of law about, and I guess I ask the questions because occasionally we do hear stories about people who are hoarding animals and who have very large numbers of animals, and it seems that mostly they're also animals that are not, they're not in good health, they're not being very cared for, well cared for, they're living in bad circumstances. But is there actually some kind of law that says how many animals you can have?
In certain areas. Urbana, we do not have an animal, a specific number of animals that people can own. We go generally by the cruelty statutes. If they're being well cared for, then you can have it and you can keep them, that's fine. There are some statutes under the state laws that would require if you have six or more intact females on your property that you would have a kennel license, because at that point you've reached the state limits to where you have to pay your dues to have that many animals. And then I know in the city of Urbana, or the city of Champaign, excuse me, they have a limit on the number of animals that a person can own at one property. I think that when it comes to animal hoarding, that's a lot different than saying I have 10 cats. I have friends right now who have 15 cats, all of which are very well cared for and happy, and you'd never know they have that many when you go to visit them. But there have been places that I've been to where I removed over 200 cats from a small three-bedroom residence. And there's a difference between having what one person may think are too many animals and actual animal hoarding. Hoarding is a completely different matter than just having one or too many dogs or cats.
Yeah. Okay. We have another caller here. Somebody in Champaign on our line one. Hello.
Yes. I guess one thing that really disturbs me are puppy mills. And you may have discussed this, but I didn't watch, listen to a part of the program, so you may have already discussed this. I don't know. But also, recently or in the last few months, I've read either in Indiana or Ohio that they were strengthening their laws against puppy mills. And I was wondering how Illinois is compared.
We did talk about this a little bit earlier, but maybe Chelsea again can touch on that.
There are some bills pending right now that would require breeders to register, and with that, we would hopefully have some control over be able to identify hoarders. In my past experience with an actual animal hoarder, once we take their animals, they move.
Well, I wasn't referring to hoarders. I was referring to puppy mills.
Oh. Excuse me, puppy mills. They are trying to restrict a person's ability to breed, and that would also be through licensing. But when we talk about puppy mills, we're also talking about animal hoarding in many of those situations.
Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to restrict the number of of animals they would have that would be allowed to breed.
Correct. And what the hope is that it would stop some of the illegitimate breeding and the overpopulation of the animals, and it would also hopefully help out with some of the animal hoarding situations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you.
All right. Again, other questions, welcome 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. A little bit earlier, we were talking about the fact that it is going to get warm sooner or later, and that you need with your animals, if they're going to be spending time outside, you need to really be conscious of that and make sure that they have shade and water and they don't get overstressed, and you for sure don't keep them in the car, windows cracked or not, you know, all of that stuff that has to do with heat stroke. So I expect also, though, one thing that might be good to talk about here as we move into the summertime is you got to be on your top of your flea control. Because maybe in the wintertime, it's not so much an issue, although it can even be an issue in the wintertime. But particularly now, if you're going to have animals and they're going to be going outside, spending time outside, you really got to be on top of your flea control.
That's right. And it's flea, tick, and heartworm prevention are all things you should discuss with your veterinarian. You want to have your dog or cat on all of the preventatives that you can. And heartworm can be a devastating disease. Devastating. When they get a mosquito can transmit heartworm disease by just a single bite. The animal gets heartworm and they actually get worms in their heart, and it can be easily fatal. And it's a very easily preventable disease with just a little chewable that the animals love once a month. So really discuss that with your veterinarian. And the same thing with the flea and tick products. Ticks can also transmit some devastating diseases that can be fatal. So you really want to do what preventative you can. And the other problem with ticks, both fleas and ticks, but ticks, the dog or cat, if they get ticks on them, they can bring those into the house, which can then go on to people. So you really want to make sure you do that prevention.
Okay. Any particular things that you would say people should think about when they're choosing what kind of flea control product they're using?
It's real important to talk to your veterinarian about that, because there are different products that are best for different animals. Some animals won't take a pill. Some animals won't take a chewable and they need an injection. Other animals do really well with the spot-ons. We have these spot-ons that you just put it right on their back, gets absorbed instantly, and it works for a month or longer.
Yeah.
So all different products available, and your veterinarian can go over those with you and find out the best one for your specific pet.
It seems to me that one of the big changes is that we now have more good things that are systemic, as opposed to back at the time when it was something that all you could do was really apply it to the coat and the skin. It was something you washed them with, or it was something you dusted them down with, and that was about all you had. And that was really not as effective as the stuff that we have now.
That's right. We have some really great products out there now that are phenomenal, and they work really well, and they prevent the ticks and fleas from ever even coming into your house, because they just immediately fall off the dog or the cat. And it can really make a difference for them to be. And, you know, dogs have cats too can get a flea allergy, where just one flea bite can have the dog covered in bumps and itchy, itchy, itchy red bumps. That's just horrible in the summer heat. Really uncomfortable. So it's really important to do that.
Okay.
I own one of those.
I've seen the picture of, who is it?
Oh, that's Leonard.
Lenny, yes. There's a picture of you on the website with Lenny. Is Lenny a Pomeranian?
He is a Chihuahua mix.
He
was a puppy mill dog with stage 2 heartworm when we found him. Full grown now, he's 9 pounds. He was 2 pounds when he was freezing underneath the car, and I can say from experience it was very expensive, and we almost lost Leonard during that process of treatment for heartworm. And it's much easier to spend $10-$15 a month than to end up treating a dog for heartworm. So yes, that's our police mascot right there.
All right, let's talk with somebody else. Caller in Champagne, this is line 1. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. This is merely a comment, and I will hang up after I make it. I think it's very nice and very considerate of the lawmakers to consider all these various control items, but who is going to enforce them and who has the money to do it? Thank you very much.
All right. Well, I don't know. Maybe that's I don't know if you, Chelsea, you want to respond to that, because ultimately I suppose it's true that you can pass laws, but then you have to have people like you, whose job it is to do the investigating, and then you have to have local governments who are serious about carrying that through.
Correct. It's easy to pass a law. It's not always so easy to enforce it, as we've seen time and time again. More than likely, it would fall to either the Illinois Department of Agriculture, who has an Animal Welfare Bureau that investigates allegations of cruelty to animals. They're also in charge of looking into all of their licensees to ensure that they are operating at sufficient levels. So it would probably be them, or it would be animal control officers, counties, and municipals that are enforcing these laws.
Right. We have about 10 minutes left. If you have questions about animal care of companion animals, you give us a call, 333-9455, or if it would be a long-distance call, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Do the animals' nutritional needs change at different times of the year, or does that really not matter that much?
Generally, it doesn't matter that much, mainly because they're not out hunting. You know, they're hunting for their dog food bowl or their cat food bowl, but they're not out hunting. And so they don't get that exhaustion from running after a small animal in the summer that they would and not get it in the winter. So it really doesn't change much. The current pet foods, the good pet foods, have some phenomenal diets. So Science Diet is just one that comes to mind, where they have joint diet and heart diet and diabetes diet. And so all of these options for the animals and providing them with optimal nutrition.
Yeah. I think I'm sure probably for a lot of companion animals, there are people – their animals are very important to them, and they take good care of them. And these animals, they do not have to worry about where their next meal is going to come from. But there we have a problem. Because, in fact, we probably have animals that are maybe too well cared for in that respect, that we have a problem with animals that are overweight.
Right.
because they probably are fed maybe more than they need. Maybe the kind of diet is not matched to where that animal is in their life, and that they're maybe like the rest of us, don't get enough exercise. Anything generally that you can say about that, and particularly, you know, how to if you have a dog or a cat, how do you know if they're overweight?
The best way to know if they're overweight, if you can, is to look at them from above. Okay, so if you look at them from above, they actually should a dog and a cat, but both should have a waist. So they should sort of have a little bit of an hourglass figure. And if they don't have a waist, if they're sort of block shaped, that's not good. The other thing is you should be able to sort of feel their ribs a little bit. So you should be able to feel the ribs, but not see them. If you can see their ribs, they're too thin. And if you can't feel them easily, they're too fat. So they're obese. And the thing that people really need to remember is that obesity, all of the secondary effects of obesity that happen in people happen in dogs and cats. So they get arthritis. You know, it's harder to walk when they're carrying around an extra 10 pounds or 15 pounds. People don't notice it as much with cats because cats tend to be sedentary. So you see a cat that's sleeping on the couch all the time and you think he's comfortable. And in reality, he's not moving around because he's so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of effects of obesity that make the pet's life very uncomfortable. And it's real important to get them out there exercising. And the other thing I just want to say real quick is it's a vicious cycle. So once they gain weight, they don't want to move much because it kind of hurts to move. It takes more energy to move. Then they move less, so they gain more weight. And it's this vicious cycle, and it's up to the owner to pull them out of it. You know, I had an owner once. I talked about her dog being obese, and she said, well, you tell that to him. He's the one that eats all the time. And I tried to explain. She was the one that was feeding him all the time. So it's really the owner's responsibility, and you really have to take their needs into consideration.
The dog's always there and standing in front of the refrigerator. The door's open. I say, no, stop that.
Make an omelet.
Exactly, right. we have a couple more callers here. Let's talk with them. Line one is next to Champagne. Hello?
Hi there.
Yes.
I love animals as much as everybody. I got a problem with fat animals, rabbits eating my flowers. Do you have any suggestions on how to dissuade this activity? Thank you.
All right. This may be a different sort of question, but I don't know. I mean, it's the kind, you know, we do a monthly show on gardening, and that's a question we get a lot. Animal, you know, natural outdoor animal pests that are eating our ornamentals or vegetable crops. Any thought about that, or is this kind of like outside of your deal?
I got a couple of suggestions. Spray deterrents can actually work really well. The only problem with a deterrent that you can get at any Lowe's, you can get it at FS, you can get it at Farm and Fleet. Essentially, it is a compound that to the rabbit smells like a wolf or a predator is in the area. And it works really well, but you have to reapply it every time there's moisture. So this week, you'd be out there reapplying it just about every day. But once the rainy season's over, you can pretty much keep them out with that. Or if that's not working for you, fencing does work. Rat wire around your particular flowers that they can't go through works. It's not quite as pretty, but it will keep them from eating them. And worse, you know, if that doesn't work for you, you can try humanely trapping them. But every time you remove one animal, another one will quickly take its place. So kind of always keep that in mind.
Yeah. It seems unfortunate that truly, if you have a problem with that, the only thing that will really work is a physical barrier.
Yes, that's correct.
You literally, if you have to put a cage, if
yes.
you have a plant that they like, fix it so they just can't get at it.
Mylar balloons work really well too, but they sometimes, after a while, they'll figure out that, hey, that's not going to eat me, so I'm just going to keep going. The deterrents, I have to really go back to those because the spray deterrents, they work really well as long as you're diligent about reapplying them. It'll, for the most part, keep your garden eaters away.
Yeah. And the things that you like are the things that are a scent deterrent, not the things that you put on to make it taste bad when you
You can do both, but the scents, because they travel farther, will keep them away as opposed to them coming up and nibbling, oh, that doesn't taste good. And then they go and they nibble the other one and, oh, that doesn't taste good. And so now all of your flowers have one petal that have been eaten off of them.
And that's these scent things. They're not things that we can smell.
No. Initially, when you first spray it, you might smell it when you're spraying it. And you'll a lot of times find them in the hunter's aisle. Hunters like to put those wonderful deer pee smells on themselves when they go hunting, and it will keep them. It'll work. You just really have to reapply it.
Yeah. Okay, line two. This is also someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Yes. Yeah. I actually have a pretty serious question. I have a 2-year-old dog, and about a year ago, I moved into a new apartment, and the dog gets plenty of exercise. We go for walks or jog every day. But about a year ago, he started to get very protective of the area that I live in. And now, if anyone new tries to come into my apartment, he'll actually go and attack them, try and bite them. If I'm walking him and a dog is walking across the street, the hair is up on his back, and he is doing everything he can to try and get away from me and attack any other dogs or people. And it's just getting to this point where I'm not even sure if I can handle it anymore. And I don't know what you're supposed to do with a dog when he used to be this great, loving puppy, easily trained, very intelligent, and now he's, you know, vicious, like a problem. So
I would highly recommend that you get some professional behavioral assistance with this. What you have is an escalating aggression issue with your dog. He's being protective, and he needs to know that you don't need him to protect you in that way. That can only be accomplished with an animal behavioralist, which there are a number of in town. You can probably go online and find a few of them. But that is going to require some work on your part and a professional to work through that. It is not a behavior that's going to go away. It's a behavior that's going to escalate.
Okay. And is your dog neutered?
Yes, he is.
Okay. Okay. Just checking.
Yes. And I'm not saying he's a bad dog, run out and get rid of him. It is a correctable behavior. It's just going to take giving you the right set of skills to work with him and you having the want to work with him on his issue.
Okay. Thank you.
You're
all right,
welcome.
Thanks. For you, by the way, and anybody else who might be listening that has training and behavior issues, one thing I want to make sure I mention at this point is that on the Afternoon Magazine, the program that follows this one, once a month they do a show dedicated to talking about dog care and behavior. And they'll be doing it this Friday. And the guests for the show, Robin Haggard and Jim Keel, they're both associated with the dog training club of Champaign-Urbana, where they do a variety of kinds of classes for puppies and for older dogs. Mm-hmm. And it's made up of people who just love their dogs. That's the center of their entire lives, and who get together periodically and do different kinds of exercise competitions. And also, as I say, they do training in how to make sure the animals fit in well with our families and that they are responsible citizens. So if you have the chance, you can tune in on Friday of this week, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and maybe Jim and Robin might have some suggestions on dealing with this very thing, because I know on past programs we've gotten questions before about that very thing, about animals. You know, they think they're protecting us, and there are things that you can do to deal with this behavior, mm-hmm. but you got to do it right, and it takes some time, and you need the advice of somebody who has dealt with this problem before. So that would also be one thing you might want to tune in. And you know, that's also a great show to listen to if you have companion animals. You can hear what kind of other problems people are having and how they deal with them. And so that's just one suggestion. And I do want to make sure we get another caller in here before we end up out of time. And that's Vermilion County and line 4. Hello.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a suggestion about the rabbit depredations. My dad used to use crushed garlic. He'd put cloves of garlic crushed in a 5-gallon bucket of water and then spray his green beans particularly with that. As you say, it has to be done after each rain, but it's certainly an organic way to go and was very successful.
That's wonderful. I've also heard you can do that with hot pepper. Have you heard that mm-hmm. too?
Well, no. I have heard of using hot pepper for some things, but I've never tried that. And but the garlic, I do know, works well. And of course, if you had it lingering on green beans, why that mm-hmm. hint of garlic.
That's right.
You might get to like that.
That's
yeah.
I sprayed my basil with garlic 1 year, and it smelled wonderful. It's like pesto right in the garden.
That's wonderful.
Oh, I know I have more rabbits this year than most. I haven't tried the garlic thing yet, but I've noticed a lot of all the tops of Solomon seals and tulips and things like that have been nibbled off considerably just in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I might go that route.
Well, thanks for the suggestion.
You
we appreciate it. And certainly there are commercial products available that and that's what they are. They're capsicum. They're hot peppers in a little bottle, and you spray that on your stuff. And I guess there again, the idea is that they'll come up, they'll nibble on it, and they won't like unless they like salsa. In which case, you know, they might say, "Hey, I like this a lot." But that's part of the idea. And I guess that either if you want to try it, you know, it's not toxic. You might give it a try. Well, we're just about the point where we got to finish up here. I don't know if there's anything sort of general that you might like to leave with folks?
Yeah, I just want to let everyone know that the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine has a small animal emergency service. It's open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. We never, ever close. You can just walk in. You can call in advance. The number is 333-5300, so you can just call in advance, let us know you're coming anytime, any day, when we take any emergencies at all.
Okay. And then on the issue of animal welfare, if there are people who have any questions about this or they have concerns about animals that they've seen, all they have to do is call
yes.
you.
All you have to do is call. You can remain anonymous if you wish to. The number for reporting it is 333-8911. That's our non-emergency dispatch. You can also contact the Humane Society. They have a humane investigator. His name is Clay. He is wonderful. He will respond to anything that needs to be looked into. And their number is 344-PAWS, P-A-W-S.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
For being
Thank
here. Chelsea Angelo, she's the Animal Control Officer for the City of Urbana. And Maureen McMichael is Associate Professor of Veterinary Clinical Medicine in the U of I College of Vet Medicine.